Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 14 of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. On Twitter, you can find me at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
Today, we have a very special guest with us, and his name is Todd Whitaker. He is a leading presenter in the field of education, a professor of educational leadership at Indiana State University in Indiana, and he has spent his life pursuing his love of education by researching and studying effective teachers and principals. He's written over 30 books, including the national bestseller, What Great Teachers Do Differently. So welcome, Todd, to our show today. We're excited to have you. You want to go ahead and just briefly introduce yourself and share your Twitter handle?
Sure. Well, first of all, I need to say if you've had Eric Scheninger, you're going to have Arne Duncan. You've had Amber. You've had Kurt Rees. You've had Dave Burgess. You ain't that excited to have me. So I
Not true. We are very excited to have you.
No, it's great. Twitter handle is at Todd Whitaker. Nothing too exciting. And Todd Whitaker.
Perfect. So let's go ahead and get started then. I guess let's just start with a little background about yourself and how you ended up in the field of education. Were you always an educator, or and how'd you get there?
Sure. Actually, I had no background in education whatsoever. My family was the first person to graduate from college. And my dad used to always say growing up, those who can do and those who can't teach. And what I realized, what he meant to say was those who can teach and those who can't go into some much less significant line of work. And I graduated in business marketing. I actually went to University of Missouri, and truthfully, I graduated in the bottom third of my class in high school and went to University of Missouri, and I said, what's the single easiest major you have? And they said business, and I said, what's the easiest area in business? They said marketing. So I got my marketing degree, and I happened to be dating a girl whose dad was a high school basketball coach and whose mom was an educator, and I saw the impact they had on the lives of so many others, and I said, I want to make a difference. So I actually quit law school at the time and got into education.
And what did you teach when you got an education? Were there certain grades or subjects?
I taught math and business education at the junior high and high school level.
And you were also a coach, right? A basketball coach?
Uh-huh. That's actually the biggest incentive originally for me to get into education.
So do you feel like being a basketball coach for students, do you think that it kind of helped you prepare to kind of be a coach for teachers now, which is kind of what you do?
You know, it's really strange. I think that everything applies to everything else if you're any good at it. You know, if you're a terrible coach, there's no chance in the world you can be any good as a teacher or as a principal. And if you're a good one, it's the exact same skill set. So I think it prepared me if I had any success. But I think that it doesn't prepare you anything more than anything else does. Just being honest.
Yeah, for sure. So
good, you can do it. If you're not, you can't do it.
Yeah. So thinking back to when you were in the classroom, what's some advice that you go around the country talking to teachers all day long, and what's some advice that your current self would want to tell your former kind of teacher self, classroom self?
Well, the first thing I'd say is don't overdo the moose. but that device is a little too far in the past. So,
yeah, do people use moose anymore? I'm not sure if they do.
Just old people. old people and Arne Duncan. But I know Eric Shen, I'm confident about that one.
I'm pretty confident on that as well.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is I think that's where a lot of beliefs came from. Some of the things I believe, probably a real core of everything, is you treat every student with respect and dignity every single day, all the time. And I guess that was just a belief I had when you got into education. I think that's just what we have to do. And my interest in becoming a principal actually was kind of ironic because I was fine as a teacher. You know, some people have like lesson plans and stuff, but I mainly just taught on personality, a little like David Burgess. But anyhow, that's a joke. I'm writing a new book called Teach Like Dave Burgess.
Hey, that it'll be a bestseller.
I know. Well, I've been practicing my card tricks. Yeah. I'm just getting ready here. So, what's interesting, when I was a teacher, and I think I was fine, and there would be kids that would get sent to the office or that would be put out in the hallway from other teachers' classrooms, and I just couldn't believe it. I thought, how can somebody not be able to effectively work with these kids? These weren't even hard kids. And I thought at the time, if somebody can help these other teachers or help the kids by either improving the teachers or having the teachers not be teachers anymore, that would be more of an impact than I could have as an individual classroom teacher. And I actually became a high school principal, and I also was varsity boys and varsity girls basketball coach at the same time, which was kind of an unusual thing, but it fit me very well. And one of the reasons I stayed single for a long time, that and personality and smell. And so that's kind of how it started.
Go ahead, Todd.
Okay. Well, looking back at, you know, being in education, do you ever see it as somebody that inspired you to teach a teacher or a family member, or even somebody inspired you to become an administrator, or was it just kind of self-motivated?
The inspiration to be a teacher was the person I'd mentioned with the coach. His name's Ray DeGrief, and he was in Washington, Missouri. And it's an interesting thing, and I'll tell the 15-second version. I used to talk about it when I speak, and I haven't for at least 10 years, maybe 15 years now. Completely true story. It was in Sports Illustrated, and his goal had always been to go to the Final Four of the state basketball tournament in Missouri. And he was the third winningest coach in Missouri high school history, averaged over 20 wins a year, and had never gone to the Final Four. And the season was starting near the end of his career. It was his 37th year, I believe. And he found out that at the start of the season he had colon cancer. And but he was able to continue coaching, but as you can imagine, it was a real struggle. And he told me he was going to have the second losing season he's ever had in his coaching career. And he was very sad because it was near the end of his career, and he knew he didn't have many more shots, much less a chance to go to the Final Four. And to make a long story, an unbelievably interesting story short, the day they were playing, they were under 500, and they won the regional and won the sectional. And the day they were playing to go to the Final Four, the first time in school history, he died that day.
Oh, man.
He voted to go out and play that night, and they won in 6 overtimes in the highest scoring game in Missouri high school playoff history.
Wow.
It's still the record. And if we have any movie producers there, feel free to contact
us. Yeah, no doubt. And unfortunately, I think they're only educators watching, but...
And I can kind of play the loser on the far end of the bench, but that was really an inspiration for me, just to see the impact one person has on so many others. And so that was really the drive to get into education, because that wasn't my family's background. I didn't have anyone in my family that did that, and I wasn't a very good student, or didn't try very hard, and wasn't a very good student myself. So that's kind of where it came from.
You know, it's funny you say that, because a lot of our guests make that comment. A lot of our guests that have really been successful in their career said that, you know, they weren't that great students. They were those difficult students or those uninterested, and then they got into education, and now they are the ones that are inspiring others.
Right. You know, it's really helpful, though, because if I'm in an inter- like if I'm a principal and I'm interviewing a prospective teacher, if I get the urge to throw spit wads, that's almost always a bad thing.
Exactly.
And what happens is many times people are teacher pleasers that are in education. And I used to always talk to my teachers about this. If one of the challenges is if you're a teacher pleaser and now you're a teacher, you don't understand why the kids don't do homework. And for me, I don't understand why kids ever do homework. And so when I could see outstanding teachers who could motivate and inspire kids to do things, I realized there was something different and special about them that we need to try to help everybody become that way. And it was really just the opposite lens of looking at it.
Thinking back when you were in the classroom, were people, you know, out there doing what you do now? I mean, you said you wanted to impact teachers. I mean, did you have someone that you saw doing that you wanted to emulate, or is it, you know, was that kind of a new thing when you started, you know, the tour and all those kinds of things in the books?
I didn't really have any. It was really just trying to figure stuff out. I don't know it's funny, when I was a principal, We did things, and it's been 19 years now, believe it or not, we did things that there's not a school in the country does yet. And I figured within a year, every school in the country would be doing it. we didn't have grades. We had over 1,200 plus middle school kids, and my teachers did one-page narrative 6 times a year for every student that they had, because we felt like assigning a grade doesn't, what's a B? Mm-hmm. And I just assumed every school in the country would be doing that in no time. But I realized that the challenge is really, how do you get people to do it? You know, and I always say, if you've read any of my books, and they're all the same, and if you've ordered two, I know you feel really blessed. one of the things is, it's really, how do you get people to do what it is you want them to do? And if you think about the best teachers, they can get the kids to do anything. And the worst teachers literally can't get the kids to do anything. And the best principals can get their teachers to do anything. And the worst principals can't get their teachers to do anything. And the best parents can get their kids to do anything, including when they're not looking.
Now, I have a question that segues from that. How do you have those teachers and administrators identify themselves as those people who aren't motivating? Because I think there's some that don't even see that.
I think what happens is you have to teach specific skills, that the great people do this, poor people don't do that, in such a specific fashion that the people know if they're doing the right thing or not. Like when you talk about things like we never argue or we never yell, that's very specific. And all of a sudden when you are yelling, you realize I'm crossing a line here. That I didn't even, what happens is most people don't even know what's wrong, because nobody's ever taught them it was wrong. I always say the first thing you have to sort out is, are people ignorant or insubordinate? And we almost always think they're insubordinate, and they're almost always ignorant. They're almost always unaware of what they're doing or unaware of what's right and wrong.
Now, you've written quite a few books, and your latest one is The 10-Minute In Service. So if we were publishers that you were having to pitch your book idea to us, how would you pitch it? What's it about?
The 10-Minute In Service?
Yes.
Yeah. And I had a phenomenal co-author, Annette Breaux, who's a lot funnier and better looking, so if you want to get her and she can play the harmonica too, so that was really...
Oh, man, music talent? Wow, we need that person.
Exactly, yeah. Right. When you get her on, just have her play Old Man. 10-minute in-service is 40 in-services that take about 10 minutes each, and it'll bring about specific change within your school by teaching your teachers how to do it, and the 10-minute time was... I always feel like, and this is a clear statement, one goal of every faculty meeting is teachers need to be more excited about teaching tomorrow than they were today. So no matter what else you do, teachers have to be more excited about teaching tomorrow than they were today. And so if at the very least I take a 10-minute chunk and I do something that would allow you to feel more effective and more excited going into your classroom tomorrow, or inspiring or whatever it is, then that's something that would be of value. And it's just really chunking it so you don't have to be an expert in something. I can just take this, share it with my teachers. It'll take about 10 minutes, and it'll bring about a change in my school.
You know, I saw that book sitting on my principal's desk the other day, and I was like, hey, I wanted to read that. So he said he was reading it right now, and he was going to hand it over to me when he was done. But, yeah, looking forward to that one. So kind of staying on the topic of I guess we're kind of on professional development. Is the way that most schools currently handle professional development wrong? And what are some effective ways that you've seen professional development implemented?
Well, I can't speak for most schools because, you know, I've been in a lot of them, and mostly they have me. So the answer when I see them, so I guess the answer is yes, they're probably ineffective. But, you know, it's interesting. There's been a big discussion, and I have such a different way of looking at things that I'm probably incorrect about, but a big discussion on Twitter about professional development, and people will say it needs to be individualized, it needs to be personalized, it needs to be teacher-driven, it needs to be, and you know what I say? It just needs to be good. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be good. You've gone to some whole group stuff that was phenomenal.
Right.
And you've gone to whole group stuff that was terrible. And you've gone to individual stuff that was phenomenal. And you've gone to individual stuff that was terrible. So why do we get confused and think the structure is the variable in that? You know, it really just has to be good. And if it's good, you don't care what the format is. And if it isn't good, you don't care what the format is. And so when we're worried about format, we're almost always chasing our tail, and even if we catch it, we never get anything.
So another book that you wrote was What Great Teachers Do Differently, and you have a chapter in there called It's People, Not Programs. Can you kind of talk to us about what you feel is the importance of people within the educational system?
Sure. And by the way, if at any time this is getting just stupid and you just want to pretend you have technical problems and stop it, it does not even...
It's great. Keep going.
Trust me,
going.
We don't pretend with our technical problems. They're real when we have them.
Okay, sounds good. And by the way, I do need to let the audience know the camera adds 10 pounds and I have like 11 pounds. So we're pretty high on this end. Everything is people. Nothing's programs. And we think everything's programs. That's how come we never find the solution to anything. You know, programs come and programs go. I say any program that is in education right now that goes by initials will be a joke in 10 years. And for us to think that any program is the problem or any program is the solution, that's how come we can never find anything. You know, the reason programs come and go is because no matter what the new program is, the crummy people can't do that one either. It just doesn't matter. You bring in a program, your worst teacher cannot do it, and they're never going to be able to do it. And then what happens is they can't do it, so then we get rid of the program. And the best teacher has implemented it, changed what they do, has it completely embedded, and now that gets taken away from them. And it just is a cycle that's just crazy.
And then you feel like you're implementing 30 different programs in 5 years.
Sure, exactly right. And in addition, the best teacher is still the best teacher, and the worst teacher is still the worst teacher, and we haven't done a thing.
Exactly.
And it's just, the biggest challenge we face in education, in my opinion, is there aren't enough really good people. And that's the biggest challenge that we face in anyway. It's the biggest challenge Walmart and McDonald's face. It's the biggest challenge Apple faces and Google faces. There just aren't enough really good people. And the real challenge in education is how do we get all people to be like our best people? Because if we can do that, then we have something. And if we can't do that, we're never going to have anything.
And do you see an answer to that? I mean, do you feel like you have an idea of how to help with that?
Well, coincidentally, that may possibly be the title of an upcoming book, but...
exclusive.
if you've read any of my books, there's nothing to get too excited about anyhow. But one of the ways I think to think about it is... I forgot what my train of thought... What were we talking about here?
Cultivating good people.
Not enough good people.
Yeah.
Not enough good people. All teachers become like the best teachers. Think about it this way. If you get it, many times student teachers are assigned on taking turns. Why would we ever give an average teacher a student teacher? How is that ever going to let that student teacher become great? Many times we assign mentors based on you teach the same subject, or you're at the same grade level, or your class is next door, or literally it is your turn.
Mm-hmm.
It limits us so much, it's just incredible. If you student taught with an exemplary teacher, the likelihood of you being effective yourself is exponentially higher because you know one way that works. But if you student teach with even an average teacher, many times you're just on your own to figure it out. The reason teachers yell is because somebody around them yells. That isn't something they learned was correct. They didn't learn it in college. They learned it once they actually got in a school and they saw dysfunctional people operating in a way that nobody even knows is dysfunctional, and nobody talks about it being dysfunctional. So then good people start to emulate average or poor people, and then next thing you know, they're average or poor also. When you hire a new teacher, you only have one simple goal, and that's for all your teachers to become like your new teacher, not to have your new teacher become like your school. It's really to have the school become like the new teacher, or else you're hiring the wrong people.
Yeah, I heard you talk down at Sci-Fair once, and that was one thing you said. You really get one shot at it, and you have to hire the absolute best, and that's the quickest way to impact change in the school is to hire the absolute best.
And I think it's also making sure we teach, we don't tell. We do so much telling. How many times have you ever been at a meeting where someone said, raise your test score? And you know what? Everybody watching has their test scores as high as they know how to get them. And nothing's keeping them from raising their test scores except they don't know how.
Yeah, but we're not keeping them low on purpose.
That's right. But if I teach you how to raise your test scores, guess what you'll do in a second? And it's the same way. Think about student management. Every teacher does the best they know how in classroom management because classroom management is selfish. If we think it's for the kids, it's for us. If any of us could get the kids to behave better, what would we do? We'd get the kids to behave better. You wouldn't even hesitate.
Yeah, there's no question.
If I can teach you how, you'll do it. But the challenge is, if we have an average person, think about this. It great principals have faculty meetings teachers look forward to and value. We've never found an exception. We've never found one exception. We've never found one great principal that didn't. We've never found one average principal that did. That's a pretty quick self-check.
Yeah.
But did you know most principals don't even know a faculty meeting could be something people look forward to and value because they've never seen one? You know, when they were a teacher, the faculty meetings were a joke, and they became an assistant principal, and the faculty meetings weren't valued. Mm-hmm. So when they became a principal and the faculty was disinterested, do you see how they might think that's normal?
Right.
But if you've ever worked with just one great principal, not only do you know it's not normal, you even know ways to help faculty meetings be valued. And in many school districts, if there aren't great people at central office, the principals are on their own to figure it out. Nobody can teach the principal how to be great because they don't know how. And average principals can't teach you how to be great. Average people cannot teach someone how to be great because they don't know how to do it.
Exactly. Or they would be doing it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said, or they would be doing it.
Sure. And if a building has an average principal, the teachers are on their own to figure it out. And scarily, and unfortunately, I don't know if scarily is a word, but if it isn't, just edit it out. If a classroom has an average teacher, the kids are on their own to figure it out. And then that's what we end up with.
So you have a great quote on your website, and you actually started the top of the hour off with this, but you basically said that those who can teach, and those who can't go into some much less significant line of work.
Right.
What's your viewpoint on teachers, or what should the viewpoint be on teachers?
Well, by the way, that on my website is quote of the month, and coincidentally, it's been quote of the month for 51 consecutive. And if, by the way, it's also my high school graduation picture on my website there, so that shows how often that's up.
Yep.
Teachers are the key to everything. You know, they are the key to everything. And the thing I want us to be aware of is the difference between the best teachers and the worst teachers. Many people think it's a sliver. It's a cavern. It is literally a cavern. You know, it's so funny. You hear all the discussions about education, and one side will say every teacher sucks, every teacher's terrible, and the other side says every teacher's great, and both sides are wrong. You know, it's sort of like when someone says teachers don't get paid enough. When we generalize, I don't know how you can take either side of that argument. The best teacher in your school doesn't get paid nearly enough. The worst teacher in your school gets paid way too much. And that's one of the challenges. Unless we do something about the ineffective people, it's reluctance to give a blanket raise to people when we feel like we're giving it to some people who aren't effective and are harmful. But the teachers are the key to everything. They're everything in a school. And that's how come we have to take care of them. You know, I just tweeted tonight, teachers don't want to be supported. They want to feel supported. And we have to take care of them. We have to stroke them. We have to value them. We have to be in classrooms every day. You know, I'm not very smart. And I'm a high school principal, and I'm 25 when I was a high school principal. Do you know why I was in classrooms every single day? Because the good teachers liked it and the poor teachers didn't.
That's right.
I mean, because what am I doing in the good teacher's classroom? I'm stroking. I'm learning from them. I'm going, how do you get all the kids to do this? This is amazing. And then I learn how to do it so I can teach other people how to do it. I don't mean just me on my own. I can use them also. But what happens is I learn the ineffective teachers start trying when I walk in the room. And so it's like, why would I not do that? I don't understand that. The good teachers I can stroke. Think about teacher evaluation, all this stuff on evaluation. You have three purposes in teacher evaluation, and if you can't do these three things, your evaluation system's wrong. You have to be able to stroke the good people, improve everyone, and eliminate the worst. And it's not mean-spirited. You just have to do it. And your best teachers want you to do it. You know, the best teachers are so frustrated when no one does something about ineffective people that are harmful to students. They're so hurt by that. It's very sad for the best teachers.
And this is what we do in corporate America. I have a background as a systems analyst. I was in corporate America for 10 years before I got into education. This is how the rest of the world works. It's like only in education do ineffective people get a pass. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I'm going to have to disagree with you.
You do? Okay.
You ever been in a Walmart?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. They weed them out really quick, don't they? There's everybody in there is just unreal, aren't they? And I'm not being critical of Walmart. I love Walmart. I went to a Walmart tonight. I like it. I feel comfortable there. Okay. Let's think about. You know, it's funny. I was just in a panel, and I'm not even going to mention people's names, but they're people way more famous than me, and all of them had noun-verb agreement, which made me uncomfortable. But When people say we need to be more like a business, do you know what I always say? Just tell me the business. So what is the perfect business? Is it the cable company? So we can only have 6-hour windows we have to be at home waiting for something? Is it Burger King? Oh, wait, how come McDonald's kills them? Is it Microsoft? How come Apple destroys them? Since all we have to do is snap our fingers and be like a business, how come the businesses aren't like those good businesses? Yeah. Don't ever tell me that businesses just weed out ineffective people.
I do see the point, and we can agree to disagree. I will say that the company that I previously worked for was far more effective and efficient than schools that I've been in, put it that way.
And you're exactly right. The one company, the N of one, you worked for, I believe you, it is more efficient than the schools you may have worked for. How about if I take you in the best school I know, and then we go in some average companies?
Yeah, I agree. That's a fair point.
I think that's just really critical about that is that it's not programs. Because I can take you in a Walmart or McDonald's that the people greet you, smile, professional, friendly, and you know what they have? Incredible leadership.
Yeah.
And the company you work for probably has incredible leadership.
Yeah, it's a very, very fair point for sure.
Right. And so it's not trying to – it's just realizing it really is about the effectiveness of the people versus just – union thing or tenure thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So I was kind of reading through one of my grad books before I got in. I'm taking a class right now in grad school, and I came across this part this evening. I was talking about just impacting change, and one of the topics it says was these are things that are known about change, and it just had a bunch of bullet points, and it said bullet point: change is difficult and seldom worth the effort. Most changes fail. And I just want to see if you agree with that or disagree with that, I was kind of taken back by it because I don't know that I necessarily agree with it. Change is difficult and seldom worth the effort. Most changes fail. If that's true, then why are we here? What are we doing?
Right. I think we could break it down and say, is change difficult? Sure. A lot of times people think people are resistant to change. I think they're much more resistant to improvement than they are change. If you could do less, you'd do it in a second. That's change. The problem is that dang improvement that's so hard. Does most change fail? Sure. But most change is led by people who may not be skilled enough to help bring about that change. We wonder if change occurs, how's that abacus working for you? Is that doing pretty good there for you? Are you doing your... The Apple 5S, which got different controversial reviews one way or the other, how many people are going to adopt that since we are so resistant to change? But what happens is I have to help you understand how come it's beneficial. It's really an interesting thing. People change for two reasons. In education, people change for two reasons. Some people change because it's best for kids, and some people change because it's best for them. And until as a leader I can bring about a change and help you understand how this is best for kids and it's best for you, there's going to be people that will always resist it. But that's the way it is in life, and that's okay. And just leaders have to be able to understand effectively how and teach people how this is the best change for kids, because all the good teachers will do it because it's best for kids, and all the other teachers will do it if it's best for them. So I have to help you understand how a change that we're going to make is both beneficial for the students and beneficial for you.
Now, you've written quite a few books, and so when did you decide that you wanted to actually write a book and spread your message that way?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing. I became principal of a school in Jefferson City, and the school was a struggling school. The previous principal had been there for 18 years, and the principal prior to him was nicknamed Froggy. And spray painted on the side of the building for 18 years was Froggy, S-U-C-K-S's. And if you think that's bad, spray painted underneath it was No, I Don't. So you can kind of imagine who it was. If anybody thinks that's funny, go ahead and tweet me. If not, just let it play. But anyhow, the school literally was unbelievably dysfunctional. And I was very blessed. At the end of my first year, my five worst teachers were gone. And the school voted unanimously to extend the school day for 20 minutes a day for no pay to put in a new program for kids. I assumed everybody did this. I assumed this is what every school was like. Then they'd take my assistant and move them to the school, and they'd have the same kind of results, and take mine and do the same kind of results. I just assumed this is what everybody did. I mean, truthfully, I'd never seen it, but I just assumed that's... And the reason was simple. I didn't want to defend ineffective people. I don't want... You know, I'm very good at defending teachers. Unbelievably good. But it's a lot easier to defend you if you're right. You know? And so often, principals and assistant principals spend a lot of time defending teachers who are wrong. But not wrong this time, who are wrong almost all of the time. And I can't live like that. I think that's very unfair. It's unfair to the parents. And so anyhow... And so then eventually I started presenting, and it was kind of funny. It just came up out of my mouth one time when I was going to present. And they said, what do you want to present on? And I said, I don't know. How about dealing with difficult teachers? I presented on it in a couple years, and the impact was incredible. And my wife kept going, you got to write this. People are going to steal this. You got to write this. So eventually I sat down in a week. It's terrible how short it takes me to write a book. But if you read them, you realize it shouldn't even take me that long. And I wrote a book dealing with difficult teachers, and that's kind of how it started. And then something else would pop into my head, or I'd hear somebody talking, and I'd be uncomfortable with what they were saying, so I'd address it.
Now, have you always been comfortable with writing and been a writer at heart?
No. I'm a I do not have noun-verb agreement. I come from Missouri, where a state where Washington has an R. when you say the word dangling participle, I still giggle. that's not me. That's my biggest weakness. And I'm the only, it's funny, I'm the only author that one of my publishers has that they have to send out to an editor before they can send it to review. Because people who read it go, oh, this doesn't even make any sense. And so it has to be, grammar has to be corrected before other people can see it, or else they can't read it. And that's a true story.
I got into education just a few years ago, and I saw you keynote at a conference here in Houston area, in Cy Fair District. It was called the Triple R Conference. And you don't really come across someone that has an issue with public speaking, and even in this interview right now, you definitely feel comfortable in your skin. Is public speaking something that's always been pretty easy for you, or?
Not really. I really I just want to. It's just one of those things. I'm just somebody that if I don't get this out, literally my head's going to explode. You know, I'm just going to just pop and burst. And so the speaking, I talk like I write just like I talk, and I talk just like I write, and so I'm doing them both at the same time. So when I'm presenting, I'm actually thinking. Like I presented at the National Elementary Principals in Baltimore this summer on how to get all teachers to be like the best teachers, and it's the first time I've done anything with it. And I, by speaking it, then I get to work out, does this make sense? Does this not make sense? And that's kind of it. When I write a book, I never read it again. It's really strange. So people ask me if this is my book, and I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
It's like a...
I guess it's kind of like those people who record themselves, or like I record lessons for my students, and I've never watched any of them because I don't want to listen to myself. Is it kind of like that? You don't want to read yourself?
Kind of, and I know it'll be embarrassing. And I'm also a windshield guy, so once it's done... It's like I feel cleansed, so let's just go on to the next thing.
Right.
You know, that's just, and that isn't a good thing. It's just we're all built different ways.
Now, one question we always ask our guests when we have them on is thinking back and looking at your career and all the things you've accomplished and all the great things that you've done, is there a time in your career that you can look back and think, man, that was a mistake, or I shouldn't have done that, or I fell flat on my face with this and the lesson you learned from it?
Well, when you sent me an email about doing this thing tonight, that was a joke. this is
really... Wow. Thank you. Where's the end broadcast button?
The thing that I most regret, probably looking back, is I had thought of bottled water years ago, and I thought, you know what? They ought to just bottle this dang water. I just buy this dang bottled water, and I go, but I'd probably be the only one who'd buy bottled, but I would buy that bottled water, and next thing you know, 5-7 years later, bottled water. And that's probably the thing that if I had done that, I wouldn't have to be doing this interview right now.
Absolutely not.
Oh my gosh.
And by the way, for all of the listeners, I am donating my fee tonight to charity. I'm just letting you know that.
Good to know.
There you go. Right. Exactly.
Hey, we don't want people thinking we pay you guys to be on here now. And there's no fee.
We don't have any money.
We have any money. Come on.
This is why we're doing a Google Hangout, because I have $10 headphones and Chris has a microphone that he stole from GarageBand. So this is how we run our show.
Hey, I've checked out the archives, and the only two words that come to mind when I see them is high dollar. So, I don't want to take away that image from you guys, so keep that in mind. Right. You had with David Blaine, was that his? Oh, Dave Burgess. But anyhow, it was pretty much
David Blaine.
I know. There you go. Exactly right. Exactly.
Oh my God! That was just Dave. That was his limited stuff. We went out to dinner with him a few weeks ago, and he did some right in your face stuff. It would literally blow your mind. I mean, it was incredible.
People were screaming at the table.
we left. It was weird.
I believe you. No, so I was fascinated by that. And no, I'm kidding. It's a truly an honor, and I see you have Arnie Duncan coming up, and what a big deal that is. And so congratulations on that get.
Yeah, that was good. Todd, you want to speak to that real quick? Or?
Well, yeah, I guess I can go ahead and interrupt Todd since he dissed us. I might kind of just talk about a future guest instead of talking about our current one.
That's wrong.
Well, we love getting people that inspire us. And everybody from Jimmy Casas to Aaron Klein to Amber Tiemann to Matt Gomez, Brad Way, Drew Minock, Eric Schiniger, Todd, you, just all these people that have always inspired us as educators, especially since we became connected educators. And so we thought, well, you know, who's probably the biggest person in education? And so I was like, well, the Secretary of Education, he has a Twitter account. Let me just tweet him and see if he wants to be on the show. I was like, we're never going to hear back. He's not going to tweet me. This is just, I was like, do I delete the tweet so nobody sees that I really just sent this to Arnie Duncan? And one of his aides messaged me back and shared with me an email, and we traded emails back and forth for a few weeks. It felt like years trying to get this together and get on his schedule, but then took it before Arnie at one of the meetings, and the secretary said he'd come on the show. And let me tell you, we were screaming in the car. We were freaking out because we are three of us normally, if Stacy ever decides to have time for our show
again. She may join us again,
But we're three teachers who teach in a tiny little town in Texas, just became connected on Twitter about a year ago, and now we're going to get on October 1st to interview the Secretary of Education. I mean, it's just mind-blowing to us that's the power of being a connected educator, is that your wildest expectations, there's the possibility of it coming true. And I love, and you know, and people have told me, well, why are you interviewing him? Well, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. And you know what? People have positive things and negative things about everybody. And we all have differing opinions on everybody, but I view it as more of a, you know, I may agree with some of his policies, I may disagree, but I'm going to get to talk to the Secretary of Education. It's only for 20 minutes because that's all that he could fit in his schedule. But, hey, I would take 5 minutes. So 20 minutes is great for me. And I'm more excited that after the interview I get to share it with my students and I get to tell them the story of, look, guys, this is something I never dreamed would have been possible. And I stepped out of my comfort zone. I tried something crazy. And look who I got to talk to, somebody who influences change on a national level. And so I'm just excited about the lesson that it's going to have for my students in teaching them that, you know, anything's possible.
And I think it speaks to hard work, too. I mean, we've put a lot of time and blood and sweat and tears into this podcast. And it just shows that, you know, with hard work, you know, some really cool things happen for you. So.
And that's one of the really big selling points that we had with the Secretary, is that, you know, we're a show that we just seek to share people's stories and to share their passions and to just show them on a more personal level. We're not a show that's out for the negative things or out for looking for the most scandalous interview. We just want people that are doing things in education, and we want to share their story with people.
Right, I feel a little grilled, to be honest. During your last dialogue, I ran and had to change my underwear because of it.
Well, good. That was our goal for this interview.
I need to put you all to work because I have a personal Twitter goal, too, that I haven't been able to accomplish.
Uh-oh, what is it?
It's to get Yoko Ono to follow me.
All right.
And, well, if anybody can do that, it's a ninja, so I'm totally on that one.
Well, have at it, you know, because you mentioned Jimmy Casas and Aaron Klein, who are two of my personal heroes, believe me.
Oh, my gosh, they're awesome.
Yes, they are. And I was out to dinner with Jimmy Cass, true story, and I had never told anyone. And I was with him and like five other people, Jeff Zoll and some other friends, Mike Nitzel and Tom Whitford, and we were out to dinner, and I told them that I decided my goal was to get Yoko Ono to follow me. And they burst out laughing and couldn't believe it. I go, it's the truth. I go, I thought, who is the weirdest person in the world? Yoko Ono, perfect. I'm going to see if she's on Twitter, and she is, and she'll follow me. They laughed so hard they couldn't believe it. They all tweeted her to follow me, and I'd sent her John Lennon quotes. I told her how much I admire her. I love her music. I think her voice is like an angel. And she'd never follow me, and they tweet her, and she follows all of them and won't follow me.
What? That's
hilarious. So I said, I tweeted, forget Yoko Ono, I'm going after Bianca Jagger. And Bianca Jagger tweets me.
Uh-uh.
And goes, what did you want? And I was like, I don't know. Anyhow, so then I tried to get Valerie Bertinelli, because she used to be with Eddie Van. Couldn't get her, so I said, I can't get Yoko Ono, Bianca Jagger, or Valerie Bertinelli. Does anyone know the ex-wife of the bass player of Air Supply? And didn't have any luck. So finally, I tweeted the guys that were with me when we had dinner, and I said, guys, I know Yoko Ono's following you. She still isn't following me. Do not let this break us up. This is exactly what she did to the Beatles. But I still have not had any luck, so...
Well, this story sounds a lot like Amber Tiemann's recent story. Did you see her blog recently?
Yes, I did. Well, I was part of the birthday crew when Troy Aikman.
Yeah, but did you see her post this week?
Yes, I did see it.
God, she got to meet Troy. So those of y'all who have been following our show, you probably heard the Amber interview, and Todd just left. Wow, we must really suck. He's going to change his underwear.
A little inspiration for Yoko. It's a John Lennon
book. Oh, there
you go. My gosh.
Helpful. So
for those listening on the podcast
this week, so when I saw that photo, I thought it was fake. But so our goal is to get Todd to meet Yoko Ono.
Hey, I want to put things.
I just wanted to follow me on Twitter.
I want to put things in perspective real quick. So I pulled her up on Twitter. She has 4.6 million followers. However, she's following 997,000 people. So the fact that you aren't one of them, I don't know. Something must be wrong there.
My son and I went to New York City last year on his spring break, and I had him stand outside the Dakota building with a sign that said, follow Todd Whitaker.
Oh, God.
And the only thing she did was close the shades on that side of the building. But other than that, I don't know why she wouldn't do it. So any help you can give me.
You're going to have the police show up at your door, I think.
He's following my son on Twitter, and I'm not kidding.
You are kidding me.
No, I am not. And it's very, very, I'm a little down, to be honest.
Well, the ninja will step in, and the ninja will get it fixed for you. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay. Jimmy Cassis couldn't do it, so you can kind of show me.
Well, Jimmy, yeah, I got this.
Okay, so now I can rest at night.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
and if I can't do it, I'll just send it over to Drew Manock, because that guy tweets like every 5 seconds, and so he'll just set up his scheduled tweets, and he'll just tweet Yoko like 5 gajillion times in an hour, and then you'll be good.
Okay, sounds good. Either that or I'll be arrested, but either one of them's okay.
Either one of them's okay. Last question of the evening. We always kind of like to end on this note. What are you really passionate about right now in education?
You know, the thing I'm most passionate about is the fact that educators make a difference all the time. I mean, it's incredible what we do. Think about how many times teachers have just made a difference every day, every single day in what we do. And the great teachers understand it's 10 days out of 10. You know, it's every single day we treat every single student with respect and dignity, 10 days out of 10. And what happens in classrooms across the country is amazing. It doesn't matter what Arne Duncan does. It doesn't matter what the State Department does. It doesn't matter what your legislation does. It doesn't matter what your superintendent does. That teacher is still the thing that impacts that school. I mean, impacts the students more than anything else. And they can take care of the students every day. And I guess that's what makes it so special to me. You know, I always like to say the best thing about teaching is it matters. And the hardest thing about teaching is it matters every single day. And think of how many people in your schools and in schools everywhere who know that every day they make a difference. And as much, you know, what's interesting, when I talk about ineffective people, people think I'm worried about the ineffective people. I'm worried about the effective people. Because I help people understand that great teachers never argue, never yell, and never use sarcasm, and I literally mean never. And I help understand what that means and all this kind of stuff. But the reason I say it is because in a school, which teacher starts to doubt themselves more than any other teachers? It's the good ones.
Right.
Because they hear people say, why are you here so early? Why do you stay so late? Why do you care so much? Why do you try so hard? And when great teachers hear, we don't argue, we don't yell, we don't use sarcasm, you know what they think? I knew that was right. I knew that was right. And they are full speed ahead. And the most powerful thing about what people like you do, the most powerful thing about Twitter, the most powerful thing about being connected, it allows great people the chance to find each other. Because sometimes in a certain grade level or in a certain classroom, in a certain hallway, in a certain subject area, in a certain school, those great people are very alone. They're the only one. And all of a sudden they have a chance to learn and draw from inspiration from others. You look at Aaron Klein, and you feel like, what am I doing? Look at what somebody does with their kids every day. And you're thinking, if I could do one-tenth of that.
Right.
But you see how you can learn how to do it from somebody great like her. And I think that's, to me, education's better than it's ever been. There's more critics, but who cares? Great people, there's always been critics. It's just the great people make a difference every day in what they do. And people like you are leading the forefront on that. And we really appreciate it.
I appreciate that.
Well, Todd, we want to thank you for being on the show. It's been fun getting to chat with you and share your Yoko Ono and how she won't follow you. But, you know, and I'll tie in right here. Just so you know, we are interviewing Arnie Duncan on October 1st, and he started following a ton of Connected Educators. He hasn't started following any of us. So this is our call to Arnie to follow me, Chris, and Stacy so that we're interviewing you. You should be following us.
Amen.
So Arnie's our Yoko. There we go.
Completely, yes, yes.
But like I said...
I've heard him sing, and it's very similar also.
Well, like I said, thank you for being here. And for those of you that are listening in or watching, we appreciate you being here as well. You can follow us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ, hashtag EduAllStars. You can go to our website to check out all of our old interviews. We're on number 14. We've had 13 incredible guests from people who are changing the educational landscape, and that's EduAllStars.com. And then you can also find all of our interviews on iTunes by just searching EduAllStars, one word, on iTunes.
Yeah, now, I noticed you said this is number 14 and you've had 13 incredible guests. Would you mind outing the person who wasn't so good as right as you go off the air?
As soon as we end this, we'll just make sure that we delete this hangout.
I understand completely. So thank you all are inspirations for me. This will be one of the highlights of my year, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I feel very lucky.
Yeah. Well, that means a lot. It really does.
Yeah, definitely appreciate it. Oh, I've got lots of great guests coming up on Monday at 7:30 Central. We have Shelley Terrell coming up. And then, like we said, mentioned earlier, October 1st at 1 o'clock Central during the school day, we'll have Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan. And if you guys have made it this far, we hope you enjoyed what you listened to. If you can go out on iTunes and just leave a rating for us and give us some feedback there, it would be much appreciated. The feedback really drives the rankings in iTunes, and it helps people, you know, find our podcast that may not have found it. If you don't like us, then, you know, go away. And we got one bad feedback, Todd. I don't know what the deal is with that.
But I saw that too. That's okay.
We'll have to address that personally, maybe.
As I heard yesterday, haters gonna hate. So
That's right. Anyway, thanks for everything, and we really appreciate you being here with us.
You all are awesome. Thanks for making a difference.